It is the Delicious Recap Family Matters. I'm John Francois. Who are you?
I am AJ Vandersent for this portion of the podcast.
But for the other portion of the podcast, who are you?
I was Rachel. No, I was not Rachel. I was Baby Richie.
And why were you Baby Richie?
Because I don't think Baby Richie gets bounced around like a basketball in this episode, but we do hear a reference of his name.
We do. And speaking of basketball, whoa, remember that basketball star, Will the Thrill Morgan from season one, episode six, Basketball Blues? We finally have the actor, and we have him coming up right now. Jacques Bolton, not only the guest star of this episode, his acting resume is wonderful. He's appeared in other things like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Sister, Sister. I think he had mentioned the Philadelphia Story movie with Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington, I think.
Yeah, that 21 Jump Street. Philadelphia is an amazing movie, by the way. But 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, by the way, that's a side note. I'm realizing that my parents had a VHS copy of the Philadelphia Story back in the day. And I wonder if it was my dad who owned it more than my mom. Because I know my mom was the more religious of the pack. I don't know. Did they rent a movie for Denzel? I don't know. But I just remember that they were like, you know, pretty devoted Baptist Christians who just had the standard views of homosexuality that a lot of Christians tend to have. And it was like, oh, you know, homosexuality plays a big theme in the Philadelphia Story. So what the heck?
It does. My parents were very religious, and I was very surprised that my mom let us watch Philadelphia and that she owned it. I was like, what?
I got to watch that movie again. I haven't watched that movie in forever. So, like, what about that movie makes Black Christians go, oh, okay, that's it could be Denzel. Maybe it's the Denzel effect, because Black people will show up for Denzel.
Black people will show up for Denzel. For me, because it's my mom was evangelical Christian, I'm going to say it's because the gays got AIDS in that movie. I feel like that's why she liked it, because it's like, hey, there's the moral of the story. This is what happens to you. And I was like, oh yeah.
Well, on a bright note, I'm sure that Jacques Bolton gave a terrific performance in that movie, as he did in the Family Matters episode that you heard us recap not too long ago, Basketball Blues. We talked to him about that. We talked to him about various other acting experiences. We talked to him about his experience as a basketball aficionado himself in real life. You know, he has a podcast he's doing. He's on the radio. He's had radio experience, as you can tell from his voice, commercial voiceover experience. He's been in the ministry, has done community service. I mean, what has this guy not done, Andrew?
He's done it all, and he's doing more. You can't stop him.
Yeah. So how about we just shut our mouths and just let the master man speak himself? Jacques Bolton, right now on the Delicious Recap. Coming to us on the phone from California, where I'm sure it's a lot warmer than it is in the cold-ass East Coast. So I think last I checked here in Richford, Vermont, where I am, Jacques, it is, I think last I checked, it was like 8 degrees. What's the temperature in California?
It's 67.
Yeah, me and Andrew, because Andrew's in Rochester, New York. What's your temperature, Andrew?
It is 11 degrees, -4 with the wind chill right now.
Oh, my God.
Have you ever spent any time in the East Coast, Jacques?
Yeah, my brother's out there.
Ah.
He's in Connecticut.
Oh, nice. I'm from Connecticut as well. What part of Connecticut is your brother from?
He's from, I know the name of it. It's on the top of my head. Not Hartford, right near Hartford.
West Hartford, by any chance?
No, it's not West Hartford. It's another name for it. Right near it.
New Hartford, New Britain, Manchester, Farmington, Newington.
No. What's the name of it? It's on the top of my tongue. It's like driving a little short drive from, it's like short drive from Hartford.
Newington, Farmington, New Britain, Manchester, Southington, Plainville.
No, I know it. It's on the tip of my tongue, too.
It's okay. Either way.
It's so close to Hartford that it seems like it's a part of Hartford.
We're going to have to look into that. Do you know at least what letter the town starts with?
If I knew that, I'd guess the whole thing.
Jacques, are you... Well, first of all, let's get into your first name, because Andrew and I, we were just going back and forth about it, how to pronounce it. So you have no French ancestry whatsoever, but you have a French name. How did that come to be?
My dad was a French teacher when I was born, and his name is James. So Jacques equals James in French.
I like that. So did your dad try to teach you French? Did he try to get you into that kind of education?
Yeah, he tried very hard. Didn't happen.
Andrew, did you learn a foreign language at all in school?
The only foreign language I learned was in Japanese, and that was in college. Spanish was offered in high school, but I did not do well at all.
Yeah, so Jacques, my family is Haitian. French is our secondary language. So I'm probably the only person in the family growing up. So my parents, they were actually born in Haiti. They got me here in America. That I was born here in America. And I was so stubborn about learning another language. And I, to this day, I feel bad for it, because it's just, when you think about learning another language from scratch, like we all know how much it took to learn English from zero to where we are now. So the thought of like learning Creole, French was just like, oh my God, what do I do? So needless to say, French classes for me, same thing for you, Jacques. I was just terrible with them.
I was pretty good. I didn't have any interest in it.
So for those listening who are kind of confused and don't know what's going on, I mean, we have Jacques Bolton. He guest starred as Will the Thrill Morgan in season one, episode six of Family Matters, Basketball Blues. So Jacques, let's just go back to the beginning. Can you tell us how you got the guest role as Will the Thrill Morgan, who is the basketball idol that Eddie Winslow looks up to? Well, Eddie Winslow is pressured to look up to by his dad, Carl. How did you get that role?
Well, I was part of a network called the Black Actors Network. We were a group of young adults who really wanted to break into the business. And so there was this guy named Travis, who was a manager, and he put together this group, and we would actually meet at Warner Brothers. We'd meet two times a week at Warner Brothers. And that group started to hold auditions. And I was already into theater and stuff like that in school. So when I heard about it, I was like, man, I got to join this group. I joined the group, went on the audition, and voila, that was it. And I got the part.
What do you think made you right for the part in the casting director's eyes? Like, what did they tell you? Like, what exactly about you made it right for the part?
Yeah, well, I understood the part because I was coming from the YMCA, where I was a sports director. And the episode was about Eddie getting to play basketball. His father was trying to get him to play basketball. So right away, I understood the role perfectly. So I was able to interpret it just like they wanted me to. Plus, I was already an actor. And so that put me over the rest of the guys that auditioned for the role, because a lot of them were just basketball players.
So let's go through the trajectory of how you got into acting, because I know you have also a background in basketball. Did both acting and basketball start when you were at Jackson State University?
No, acting actually started before Jackson State. It started in, my brother did it while he was in high school and I was in elementary. So I was always watching him at John Muir High School in Pasadena. So I started acting in elementary school, actually, and went through junior high. But the way it happened at Jackson State is that I was into radio and I was on the air, and a fax came over the radio station line, and it said that they were auditioning for a commercial. And being as nice as I was, I looked at that audition. I said, nobody else is going to see this. So I took that paper and kept it to myself. And I was the only one that showed up at the audition at Jackson State. And it was for a hair care commercial. And of course, I got it because it was only me and another girl that signed up. And so they hired us right away. And that's where it started at. And then Jackson State, the company in Jackson State called WLBT, which is NBC out here, sent me back out to Los Angeles to an affiliates convention. And that's where all their affiliates, they were appreciating all their affiliates down at the Century City Hotel. And I said, shoot, since I'm from there, I'm going to go. So they sent me out there, and I sat in the affiliates convention, met all the people from NBC, vice president, all the actors. I was hooked after that. After that, I got this audition saying we want somebody that's 6'6", light skin, and that can act a little bit. So I went to it, and there was about 70 other people that looked just like me on the audition. And my dreams were just crushed just then. I could not believe there's so many people trying to act. And so that's where it kind of started and stalled in the same year.
That's interesting, because I guess I had the impression that for a while you were kind of on this basketball trajectory, and then acting kind of came accidentally in college. But it seems like, you know, acting, broadcasting, that entertainment industry field for you was already within you, like way before you played basketball.
Well, it wasn't way before I played basketball, because I played basketball in elementary also. So I'd say it was about the same time. They both hit about the same time.
So
I started playing basketball in elementary school, but I also started acting in elementary school.
And when you were in elementary school, I mean, were you daydreaming of like, oh, I'm going to be an actor or a basketball star? Like, was there any?
I was daydreaming I was going to be both of them. I was going to be a professional basketball player who happened to act.
Yeah. And Andrew and I have said over and over, I mean, and I'm sure you've heard this before. You have the perfect, perfect voice for radio. Perfect.
I wish the money said that.
Well, talk about that. I mean, at any point, did you try to get radio announcer work or work as a radio station personality?
Yeah. When I was in college, I actually worked on the college's radio station. And then when I came back out to L.A., which was because of acting, I joined radio station Q102 and KGFJ way back in the day. I think both of those stations are gone now. But I was a morning air reporter on both of those stations. And then I became a radio personality on a smaller station right after that. Still playing basketball, still acting. Because I did it in high school, on the college radio station. So I was interested in all three of those. They were a heavy interest of mine all my life.
Wow. And, you know, you and I are similar in that, you know, I work in radio currently. I've had a background in theatrical acting. And I wonder if you at any point saw more pros than cons in the other. Like, for example, I just kind of went on the radio path because I was looking for, you know, working in entertainment while having the steadiness of a 9-to-5 and a check.
Like, Exactly. Basketball, you had to be much more mean than you did in acting and radio. You almost had to be selfish and wanting the ball and wanting to dominate your opponent. But as you know, in radio and acting, you're listening to your opponent and you're replying to what it is that he or she is saying. Basketball is just the opposite of that. So pretty soon I had to choose between the two. And because the acting career began to take off, I took that thinking it was going to keep going until I was rich and famous and that basketball would not keep going. I made a bad choice. Well, no, it wasn't a bad choice. I made a difficult choice and I stayed with acting. And I did acting for about 15 years. And then they started the trend started to be with young people with washboards and all that stuff. And that meant my time was up. But I did Family Matters. I did Sister, Sister. I did 21 Jump Street. I played in Kindergarten Cop. I did a whole bunch of good stuff really quickly for about 4 years. It just kept going back to back. All the while, basketball just kind of stalled because I couldn't do both.
I mean, you got a basketball scholarship at Jackson State, right? I mean,
right. Yeah.
Okay, so you got that basketball scholarship, and I mean, I would assume that getting that scholarship, maybe, you know, that's where you're kind of thinking like, okay, you know, maybe basketball is the prime career choice. But like you said, you had to choose, and acting kind of won over. And you know, here we are with, you know, the acting role that we're talking to you about, your time guest starring as Will the Thrill Morgan. Can you take us through what the process was like from the time you got the script to the final tape night with, you know, the cast members, the studio audience? Like, what was that entire experience like?
Well, I got the script after I auditioned for Family Matters. I auditioned for a person that's become a friend of mine now, Monica Swan, who was casting Family Matters and Cheaper by the Dozen. She was a big casting director. And so I got the part through her. I got the script. I was actually very shocked because there were a lot of guys there. They were auditioning for the same role. They were much taller than I was. But like I said, I had a lot of the acting experience behind me and I understood the role. So as I read the script, I was like, shoot, I understand this. And so I went to the set to shoot the scene. I understood the script, but I did not understand television acting. And so I don't think I was quite energetic enough. I was playing it real cool, like an athlete, actually. And actually, the director told me, he said, this is not quite right. That's not how a professional athlete would act. So I just started playing more energetic, and it worked out. It worked out actually pretty good. They played it over and over again for a long time. From there, I did a lot of other roles.
Really? Andrew, I don't know if you can speak to this, but I actually, like, when I saw your Will the Thrill Morgan jock, he seemed pretty cool and smooth. I mean, I don't know. I just, that's just the kind of energy that I emitted off of you. Did you sense that too, Andrew?
I did. I sensed it. I sensed that your Will was very chill, like the cool person that you want to get to know. You're not sure if they're going to like you, but he just seems super cool. So were you more chill than that and you pumped it up?
I was just getting ready to say, you saw how chill that was, right? Now picture being more chill by twice as much. I was almost quiet now that I think about it because I didn't think a professional athlete would have to prove anything to anybody. I thought he would come in real cool. So I was playing it too cool at first. And that cool that you see with Will the Thrill is much more energetic than it was at first. And that was director, and everybody. I guess, you know, back in the day, it was high energy sitcom. They wanted you to be funny, and all my sitcoms, I was the other ones after that, I was funny and loud and all that stuff. But this was my first one, and so I played it like I imagined a pro athlete would be, which would be just very cool. Nowadays, he would be cool. But back then, it just didn't fit in back then. So they told me to amp it up a little bit, and I did. And you saw it. Amping it up a little bit was like you saw it then, which is still kind of cool.
Interesting. I really want to know how we could get the cooler than the cool that we already saw. That's very interesting. And did you have any role in like how Will dressed? Because I know Andrew, you and I had talked about like the sort of off basketball time dressed way that you know Will the Thrill Morgan dressed. And Andrew, do you remember like what specifically was his outfit?
I remember you had a brown bomber jacket that looked like it could have velour and leather sleeves, and then you had these black pants. I'm sorry, not black, brown pants that were very, how do I say it? Like dressy, but still casual at the same time. It kind of gave me like Michael Jordan in style.
I don't know if I had any influence in that, but I do believe I had an influence on how, you know, later on his acting turned to be more, actually it was more cool. He was more cool himself. Acting like his regular role instead of acting like Will Smith all the time. And I know that when I did the Will Smith, it was called The Philadelphia Story. I heard somebody say, this guy's not really acting, but I was being cool. And then a director came out and said, we really enjoy what you're doing. And it was just being cool the whole time. I was not excited. I was not overly excited or trying to bully him too much. I was just being a cool bully. And the director came out and said, we really enjoy what you're doing. After that, I noticed that Will Smith, and I'm not saying that I probably had nothing to do with it, but I like to think that it was after that he started acting more subtle, more cool in his role. And that's what they're saying about him now. I think it's good.
You're saying right now that you've influenced Will Smith. That's what you're saying right now.
No. I would like to say that I influenced him, but I probably didn't. That's just probably me thinking.
I think you did.
Well, I was going to say that scene that you have with Will Smith, it was so smooth. It felt natural just watching it. I watched it when I first watched Fresh Prince and I just been obsessed with that. But then I rewatched it recently and it just seems like such a natural, unscripted interaction from you and how you're behaving, how you're so chill and laid back. So is that what your go-to element was going to be?
Yeah, that's how it was. And I understood that role also because, again, I was doing youth sports at the time. I was actually a director at the YMCA at the time. And kids being bullied by a person that was a bully in his younger days and then turned around and became a helper in his older days was right up my alley. That wasn't a hard audition at all. I got that real quick. Matter of fact, they called me in for that. And that whole take was very easy. A lot of people didn't understand it because of how cool it was played, but people appreciated it after it was over. It was a fantastic part.
Going back to your Family Matters experience, Jacques, do you have any memories acting alongside Reginald Vell Johnson, who played Carl, Darius McCurry, who played Eddie, you had Jo Marie Payton, who played Harriet, Rosetta Lenoir, who played Mother Winslow. It looked like your scenes were with them. Any particular memories that stood out, like when you were working with them?
Yeah. I'd say that cast was one of the best casts that I'd ever acted with. And that was years and years and years ago, but I can remember it like it was yesterday. As a matter of fact, it was time for lunch and they were all going to this new restaurant that was opening. And I was just a guest star. And they asked me, did I want to go with them? And I said, no, I'm waiting on somebody. I'm going to go to lunch with them. So then Reginald said, do you want to use my car? Now, he had a Mercedes, didn't know me from Adam, and asked me, did I want to take his car? And I said, oh, man, no, that's okay, Reg. And then they asked me again, did I want to go with them? And I said, no. So I just waited outside, you know, for the person I was waiting on. And I was sitting there like, man, why am I out here? I should be with them. But they were kind of new on the scene. And so they were going to new restaurants, just introducing themselves. Reginald was cool. And then Darius was very cool. He was the first person I met on the set. I went to lunch with him. He took me around. He showed me the different things. He was really cool, too. Showed me how he got into acting. Showed me where the cafeteria was. Showed me where all the stuff was. And the other person that I spent time with was Oh my God, I can't, you know, I can't believe I'm forgetting her name. Tony Orlando and Don. What's her name?
Thelma Hopkins, Rachel Crawford.
Thelma Hopkins. Yeah. I ate with her a couple of times and talked to her a couple of times about my family and her family. That was one of the greatest casts that I'd ever acted with. And no, it was the greatest class that I ever acted with. And it was, like I said, it was about 15 or 20 years ago. Now it's about 25 years ago. And I can remember it because of the way they were, like it was yesterday.
Wow. I mean, actually, it was like, what, 35 years ago at this point? Because that episode was like...
It had
like,
to be.
Yeah. That episode was like fall of 1989. A few points that I wanted to point out. So Reginald Vell Johnson, you had mentioned him being cool enough with you taking his Mercedes if you need to go for a ride around. It's interesting that you say that because in the episode, your Will the Thrill Morgan character is trying to sell his luxury car to Carl.
That is true.
So I wonder if the writers use that real life experience with Reginald's Mercedes into the story. Does that have anything to do with anything? Or
No. He offered me to ride his car after it was already written. The show was already written, and that was during the show that he offered me that. But I didn't think about how that tied in until you just said it. He offered me the car, and I was just blown away. But then he offered to buy my car to get me to talk to Eddie. And we were just laughing throughout that whole scene because that was just so funny. He wanted Eddie to play so bad that he went out and got a professional basketball player to tell his son that he should play. And his son did not want to play. And when I was in the audition, I understood what they were trying to say. So when I auditioned and I told him good luck, like good luck with your parents and your basketball and all that. And they stopped me. They said, no, that's not why you're saying good luck. You're saying good luck like I'll see you later. But I understood the script that Eddie did not want to play. And he had to go tell his parents and his family that he did not want to play. So I was looking at him and saying, well, good luck. You know, good luck with your endeavors. But that's not how they wanted me to play it. I remember that also. That role was right up my life's alley so well that I remember every part of it like it was yesterday.
And given your real life basketball experience, obviously going up to the scholarship level, did you act as a consultant of sorts to either Darius or the writers as to how to accurately portray certain basketball related things in the episode?
No, not in Family Matters. That's when I was on 21 Jump Street, but not Family Matters. I didn't act as a consultant at all. Like I said, they pretty much had the whole show written and done by the time that I got there, except for I told them to lower the basket because I had to dunk in the basket. And that'd be hard trying to dunk on 10 feet the whole show long, especially when the live audience was there. So I told them to lower it to about 7 or 8 feet. And that way I could dunk without getting tired and dunk with clothes on also.
Talk about that studio audience experience when it's tape night and you're in front of the crowd. Like, what is the energy like? How are you feeling?
You're feeling like you had never gone through that in your life. You might have rehearsed for 2 weeks straight or a week and a half straight like we did. But when I got out there and that studio audience was out there and they were so close, I almost forgot everything that I had learned. I almost forgot my lines. I almost forgot what scenes we were doing next. I was looking at the audience, all the pretty girls. It was just crazy. It was crazy. I had my brother in the audience. I saw everybody. And just to have, and they were clapping and that kind of stuff, that just kind of throws you when you're thinking. You forget everything that you had rehearsed for a week and a half previous to that. And it was nerve-wracking, but it was fun. It was great having them there. It gave you more energy when you heard them respond to what it was that you were doing. Made the scenes go better. And there was a scene in the show that they wanted me to take out, but I wasn't a professional actor. I said, no, I can't take this out. That was when he told me, how did that go? My lines were all no. I don't want to do it. And I smiled and they didn't want me to smile. They said, take that out. And I was like, no, I can't. I can't. And needless to say, they never hired me back either on that show.
Interesting. Wow. So you're talking about, like, you know, getting along and having lunch with Thelma Hopkins behind the scenes. Andrew, didn't you and I kind of speculate that, like, oh, Will the Thrill Morgan and Rachel could have had something? Because there was a point in the episode where Rachel wanted to see Will the Thrill Morgan. And this was like when she was like all messed up in her terrible casual clothes trying to make brioche muffins. And just as Will the Thrill Morgan. Yeah. Was there any discussion amongst you and Thelma about like doing scene work together like that, where there could be some like kind of romantic thing between Will and Rachel? Is that something that maybe you two kind of influenced the writers on or no?
Not me and Thelma, but I saw it and I went to the writers right away. And I said, I tell you guys what, I got a great scene for you guys. Thelma and I will get together and date later on. They kind of laughed at me like, listen to this little athlete actor trying to tell us how to write. And so we never did it, but I thought that would have been a great idea. It was set up for it. I thought it'd be a great idea. Kel and I would get together on a second or next episode and it would just take off.
I was hoping that we would have gotten you back as a recurring character because That would have been so cool. You miss Rachel because you guys go to the basketball court. She went to go change her clothes, but then all of a sudden you reconnect. And to know that you brought that up to the producers and the directors to say that this could be something is even more amazing now.
Yeah, I brought it up to the writers. I didn't bring it up to the producers or director, but I went straight to the writers and told them. I was like, wait, this is a hit scene right here. Because she liked him. He didn't notice her at first, but he noticed her after a while. That would have been fantastic. And they looked at me like, will you shut up? And I was like, okay, never mind. But had I known then what I know now, I would have kept pressing. I would have went to the producers and told them because that would have been great.
When you're going to the writers and you're presenting this idea, are you presenting it as, oh my God, this would be a great moment for that just particular episode? Or are you thinking, oh, this could be a great moment that could get me back on the show more and more and more after this episode?
The second one, I said, this would be great for another show. Will and Rachel would get together. She was a tall young lady, so it would have looked right. We would have had something. We would have had something in common. It would have sounded right. It would have played right. It would have been great. But that was around the time that what's his name? He actually took over the whole show. He's from Pasadena too.
Talking about Jaleel White,
Steve Urkel.
Yeah.
That was around the time that he came on and took the whole show over. So I don't know if they were doing any new episodes or not, but it was right after that he came on.
So you're actually, so we know that you're in one of the pre-Urkel episodes. You are in episode 6 and Urkel doesn't officially debut until episode 12. So you actually come on like quite a bit before Steve Urkel comes in and gradually becomes the star. Now, speaking of which, when you saw Steve Urkel, like what were your thoughts as he took over the show more and more? Did that like increase your interest in maybe coming on for another guest appearance? Did you maybe try to get in touch with cast members or writers to get yourself on again?
When Steve Urkel came on, that's when I was really, really headed in my acting career. I did a lot of other sitcoms, so I really didn't think about it that much. I thought he was blessed to have been able to do what he did, come on as a guest star and then take the show over. And basically it was about him after a while. But I really didn't feel bad about it or hate it because I'd already started in other shows. And I was going on about once every other month on some type of show or movie or something like that. But I, out of all the things that I did, I never will forget that whole cast, that whole situation, because they allowed me to be in every part of it. And when I say every part, I mean to look behind the scenes, be in the commercials. I acted. I went places with the staff. It was just like, it was a great indoctrination in the sitcoms.
Do you mind telling us more about that when you say, being in commercials? Like, what do you mean by that?
I started acting with other commercials and other sitcoms. I did, I went to Sister twice. I did LA Gear commercials. I did a bunch of other stuff right next to each other right after that. I almost even forgot about Family Matters during that time. But now I can think of it as one of the best projects that I've ever done because of the people. And I'd understood the role so well that I had a really great time. There was no time when I was like sitting up by myself going, okay, I don't know anybody. I don't know what to do. They always came to me and asked me what I was doing, especially during break time. I was going to lunch with somebody. I was talking to somebody. I was sitting with Eddie as he was calling other people from other shows. It was a great time. It made me really, really, really want to be a sitcom actor.
Can you describe where the show is taped? Because it sounds like it might have been taped in like some kind of multi-soundstage complex where maybe there were other shows, other casts around.
Yeah, I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was at Warner Brothers in Burbank.
Yeah.
If I can remember correctly, because I'd get them mixed up, but I believe it was the Warner Brothers.
And Andrew, I don't know if you heard about this, but I think once Jaleel White got on the show, I always heard about like basketball games happening between like him and cast members from other shows. Maybe Jaleel White was playing with like the Home Improvement kids or whatever. Because of your basketball expertise, Will, were there any nice, fun basketball games happening like backstage in between takes? Or
No, not at all. Actually, we did play while I was on Family Matters. But interesting enough, I was director of the YMCA out here in Pasadena, and Jaleel White actually played for us before he was on Family Matters. So I knew him from there. He was a very, very good athlete. He was kind of small, but he was just a great athlete, a great basketball player. You could see that when he played on Family Matters. First, he started off playing bad, then he started playing good. But in actuality, he was a good basketball player, a good little athlete. And he played for us at the YMCA.
So was this also before your guest appearance on Family Matters, or was this when you already like guests as
it was before my guest appearance?
Oh, got it. So maybe the show wasn't even on the air yet, and you guys, just didn't know that you would, coincidentally be on the same show, but at different times.
Right. Right. And everybody was surprised at how good he was. I think he went to South Pasadena High School. I think he may have played there for a while before his acting career just took off.
So, Jack, I have to ask, first to start off, because you mentioned the Black Actors Network, and I have to ask you, were you there when the group got together initially, or was this a network of Black actors that you got with once you got into the acting scene?
No, I joined their first year that they got put together, and they were put together by a bunch of Black actors because they were feeling like they weren't auditioning enough, and they felt like they needed another tool to get in front of producers and directors, not just being out on their own and just auditioning, but a tool that people had to recognize. That group had gotten so popular that Hollywood really did not recruit Black people well. And so for a while, they were just going to that group and going, okay, this is a Black role we have. Who wants to audition? Or can we audition? You have a spot for this person or a spot for that person. And that's how Family Matters came up. I was like, sure, I'll do it. They also got us agents. And I got a real nice agent called Media First, Raphael Berko. He got me in a bunch of other stuff. And all that is because of that one group of Black actors that met twice a week. They told us how to act. But they also told us the etiquette of auditioning. You don't go in there acting crazy. Don't go in there talking a lot. Don't go in there messing with people. They just gave us a holistic point about a holistic role of acting. And we used it to get a lot of auditions. A lot of us got a lot of shows through that network.
Really? See, that's amazing. I've always wondered, because I know there's a tight-knit community in Hollywood. There's that stage presence when you're in a network like Warner Brothers Studios. I've heard it's like a small city. So when you're in that environment, how was it having that backing of the Black Actors Network as you started to develop your career?
It was really good because we made it a point that if we knew of an audition or if we knew of a studio or a place that was auditioning for something, we'd go tell the rest of us about it. And so we'd all showed up. And when we show up, like if two or three of us showed up at the same role, we'd audition together for that audition. We practiced together for that audition. It was like having a support system that nobody else had. And I think for a while there, we were getting more shows than anybody because of the group that we were. Now, the studios didn't have to look hard for Black people because they just come to that group and they can pull any of us that they wanted to pull out of there. Now, a lot of those guys became performers on the other side of television, like directors and producers. I think, I think I was one of the few that became actors, but all of it was for actors in the beginning. We have casting directors come see us like twice a month. We do scenes in front of them. We did a showcase at Warner Brothers where we asked all the agents, the casting directors, producers to come in and watch us. We go to each producer and director and we present a role that they would put together at a showcase. In other words, like producer A would put together a role, producer B would put together a role, and there were scenes that we already had. We took it to them to be produced and directed, and we had a big show at the stage, at the auditorium in Warner Brothers, and a bunch of agents came. That's how I got a large agent with being a newbie, which is kind of unreal.
That really explains so much. It opens my mind up to the concept that there's not only this network of individuals who are Black in Hollywood who are working together to get even better, but then you see how it affects the entire spectrum of how producers and people who are going to be casting agents look at you. Now, right. When you joined the Black Actors Network, was that what you thought it was going to be initially?
It was more than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was just going to be we're going to get together and act out a few roles. I had no idea that we would be meeting producers of new movies, directors of television shows. We'd have producers coming in and talking to us about the business. I had no idea about all of that. And it was fantastic. I think it was a guy named Don Barnes, Michael Whaley, and I'm forgetting one of the guys that started it, along with Travis. Oh, my God, I hate to forget him. But the four of them started the network. And it was about 30 or 40 of us that were, like, there for good. And it worked. It worked well. All of us got roles out of that show. I got five or six of them out of that network, back to back to back to back. That's why I thought this Hollywood thing is going to work for me. I was working all the time.
See,
movies, televisions, commercials, all of it.
And they helped you get those connections and build them stronger?
Yeah, exactly. One, by telling you what to do. Two, by introducing you to those people.
Now, are there any?
I got called into a lot of directors that I never got a show from. I got called into some huge directors. Who was the owner of NBC at the time that died? What was his name? He was the president or vice president.
Bob Wright, Brandon Tartikoff.
Tartikoff. He actually came to us one evening. We got to talk to him, and it was just amazing. It just blew me away.
That is amazing to meet all those people and make those connections. Now, tying it back to Family Matters, when you got to make these connections and then you're on the Family Matters set, are there any times or any moments or anything that we didn't get to see in the show that you wish you could have had added in?
There was a young lady there. She played the youngest daughter. Mm-hmm. And I thought we had great chemistry because I was already working with kids at the YMCA. But they cut that role for some reason. That was a whole scene that they cut. And we had a scene back and forth. She was talking about how tall I was, and I was talking about how short she was. It was a really good scene. And they cut it for some reason. And then I noticed she wasn't on the show anymore after that. But that was a great scene.
So I know what scene you're talking about. So one of our listener fans is at Judy Winslow Matters on Instagram. And it's funny you say that because she actually shared with us a photo of that deleted scene that you're talking about featuring Judy. Judy Winslow is the name of the youngest daughter that you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's the only episode that Judy did not appear in for the entire season. So yeah, it's very funny that you're talking about that exact scene that we showed a behind the scenes photo of on our social media.
Right. Yeah, they all were, well, Harriet Winslow was extremely nice, but all of them were nice, but Judy and I had good chemistry. I don't know why they cut that scene, but I thought it was good. I don't know if it was for timing or whatever it was, but it was a great scene. And because, you know, I talked to them all the time outside of the actual acting, our acting was better, more chemistry in the acting, because it was like I was acting with a friend. Reginald, Darius, all of them, especially. Thelma.
So can you give us some insight into like the conversations that you would have like once the cameras were off? I mean, obviously you don't have to, you know, tell us anything like too private that nobody wants shared. But yeah, what were the offstage conversations that you were having with the cast members that made the
we would talk about Reginald's career. I talked in depth about Darius's career and how he got started as a kid and on the shows that he was on with the other guys and how he got over to Family Matters. Spoke to Thelma about my family, my brothers and sisters, and that's basically what it was about, our families off the air. There was the mother, the grandmother, what was her name?
Yeah, Rosetta Lenoir. Rosetta Lenoir. How was
she? Fantastic. She was actually, she got sick while I was on the air, when I was on that show. She was fantastic. She was like a real grandmother to you as you were there. I don't know what they did with that cast or how they brought about that cast, but that cast was a really friendly, family-oriented cast. And that's probably with everybody that was a guest star on that show, but especially for me while I was there. They went out of their way to go out to lunch with me. They went out of their way to loan me their cars. They went out of their way to tell me about their background. And I'm always big on trying to find the background of people that are doing stuff that I'm trying to do. So I thought it would be some pushback, but they were like, no, let me come over here and sit down. Let me tell you. And they were always like that.
Have you kept in touch with any of them over the years?
I saw Darius at a couple of celebrity basketball games that I was holding at a place called Blair High School in Pasadena. But other than that, no, I haven't contacted anybody. I would say Family Matters is what gave me the knowledge of gave me the idea of what to do when I got onto those sets. I knew nothing about a soundstage, but it was Family Matters that taught me how to act once I got there. And Fresh Prince, I played the person that sent him out here to L.A. in the first place. He had a bully that bullied him in Philadelphia, and his mom says, you're going out to move to your uncle in L.A. because you're getting bullied all the time. Well, he came back to Philadelphia, and I was that bully that sent him out here in the first place. That whole role, everything that I did, was based upon what I learned at Family Matters. On that role, on Sister Sister, on 21 Jump Street, on A-Man, all the shows that I did, because Family Matters was so lax and had a great learning environment, everything that I learned at Family Matters, I took to those other roles. And the biggest thing I learned is just be yourself. Be yourself the whole time. Reginald was like that. He always seemed like Reginald. Darius, they teased Darius on the show. They said he would act crazy during the rehearsals, but when it was time to act, he really turned it on, and he was a great actor. So I just learned to be yourself. People will like you. Don't worry about it, and act your best.
Now, you had mentioned being understandably very nervous when it was tape night in front of the studio audience for your Family Matters episode. And I know that with sitcom taping experience, is they tend to take multiple takes over and over. You might be there for 3 to 4 hours. Did you find yourself having to take a lot of takes because you were nervous or flubbed a line or anything?
Oh, heck yeah. Matter of fact, I never forget this either. On Family Matters, I was looking around at everybody and they told me to go and dunk the basketball. I didn't even hear him. I was looking around so many times. He said, Jacques, dunk the ball. Finally had a tap. Young man, go dunk the ball. I'm looking at the audience going, man, these are some basketball players in there. What if I miss this shot? This is the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen. But when the audience came, you got became heightened about what it was that you could do wrong and how they would react to it. But on the other hand, when you did something right and they clapped about it, it was fantastic. It was good energy there. You got quick applause for what it is that you did right. Quick applause for what you did wrong. The studio audience was live, and that was the biggest thing about it.
Take me through the night. So it's like it's a warm up comedian first. That's what I've heard from past guest star experiences. And then you do takes of the scenes, and then you're done. So I mean, how long is the night lasting? Like 3, 4, 5 hours?
Yeah, the night lasts about 3 hours because there weren't many scenes that we did over again because we had rehearsed for like a week and a half previous to that. So we just took all the scenes and did them in order and told the audience, you know, which part of the room was which part of the room. But it lasts about 3 hours. We had a warm-up comedian, and we were under makeup and getting dressed and getting ready. We came out, and I think we may have rehearsed the scene that we were getting ready to do. We might have a short rehearsal, and then we did the scene. But it wasn't that many double takes at all, because we had it down pretty much how it was. And the audience, when they clear, we always had to wait for the audience to stop clapping, and they wanted the audience to clap. But this audience, if I remember correctly, they didn't have to encourage to clap that often, because once Eddie decided he didn't want to play basketball, after his father was trying to force him to play, they clapped like it was crazy.
Young man
choosing his own role. Oh, yeah. He finally got a chance to be Eddie.
Andrew, I don't think we heard any clapping at all in the final cut, did we? Like, once Eddie made that decision, it was pretty silent, wasn't it?
It was silent. So this is a whole different concept now, because me, as the viewer at home, I was super happy when Eddie stood his ground and said, "I don't want to play."
Now, you know how you felt? That's how they felt.
Really?
Wow. So that's why would they felt. I mean, like, I get cutting like 55 minutes of clapping. I mean, that's a lot, but like even just a little bit of that clapping reaction, like I wonder why the producers chose to cut out that enthusiastic audience response. I think that would have been a nice response to hear in the final cut.
That's a good question. But I remember that they were happy that he stuck to his guns and did not want to do it, even after meeting a pro basketball player. When I read the script, I thought for sure that at the end of the script, he was going to be a basketball player. And then his dad did not pressure him anymore after that.
Wait, is that correct, Andrew? Because I think Carl pressured Eddie about the grades in the episode before, and then it was basketball. Was there another episode where he pressured Andrew?
Carl's a bit of a pusher, so he's going to push his kids. So we know it's coming. He did pressure him a little bit after that on the next episode, and then the episode afterwards with the shower, where he's like, "You're going to be my crew, and you just have to do this." But this is just...
Oh, no, okay. I've been pressured with basketball, but you mean pressured with other things.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a crazy development for me, because this is something I have hoped for. I always wanted in that episode for Eddie to stand his ground and to be encouraged to do that. So to have that moment, it was pretty cool. Now, is that something that you think, if they had developed that more, would you have been someone to try and encourage that as another character to come back?
For him to play basketball?
Yes.
No. I was all for the way they ended that. And I was surprised by it, but I was struggling for it, because I see kids all the time that basketball is fun, but they don't want to go into it for a career. Or they don't want to go into it in high school or junior high school. And so I tell them the same thing. Do what you love to do, because you won't be a good basketball player at all if you don't love it. And Eddie did not love it. And maybe because he was being so forced into it that he didn't want to do it, but he really did not want to do it. And I always say, if a kid is like that, don't make him play sports, because he will not enjoy it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, you brought up a good point, because that was kind of a question I was going to ask you, Jacques, you know, whether the pressure that Eddie received from his dad to make it big in basketball is something that you saw within your own circle in real life, either with a family member or friends or anything like that. So it sounds like, yes. I mean, especially in the Black community, I would imagine. I mean, we see that all the time.
Right. No, amazingly enough, it was just the opposite for my parents. My mother was a doctor in psychology. My father's a doctor in education. My brother's a doctor in theology. They weren't thinking sports at all. Now, listen to that. Doctor in education, doctor in psychology, doctor in theology, and a basketball player or radio host. Although they were like, thinking, what is wrong with this kid? I know they were thinking that.
So are you still a part of the Black Actors Network, Jacques?
No, unfortunately, it disbanded. It disbanded about, I'd say it went on for about 4 years. Then it disbanded. And I hate that, that my career started with that, because I didn't learn while being in the Black Actors Network how to hit the ground and pave the ground and work hard for roles, because they just came to me. I'm sitting in that audience. I'm sitting in the auditorium. The roles just came. Whereas other actors were out there working in the streets, going to casting directors, sending out their pictures, doing all that stuff, which I did not learn. So when that ended, my career took a big slowdown. But because I met a lot of people, it kept going. But I was not as thrifty as those that got their own roles, which it bothers me now, but it didn't bother me then at all, because I didn't have to get my own roles.
Can you tell us when the Black Actors Network was operating, like what big time shows and movies people got roles in as a result of being a part of the Black Actors Network?
All of them that had a mixed audience, they came to the Black Actors Network first. As a matter of fact, it got to the point where we started a casting director's office. We created a little office that was a cast that we made like a casting director. So you had to do was call the office, and we would pick out people in the Black Actors Network that would fit those roles. I got three or four of them from that group, and there were a bunch of others of us that got roles also, either as producers, directors, or actors. There was a young lady named Wendy Williams. She got a starring role in The Army Wives. There was a girl named Lanai Chapman. She starred a role with Whoopi Goldberg. There was a bunch of us did a lot of things because of that group. That was an easy out for the industry. We don't have to go all over the city of Los Angeles looking for a black person. We can just call up the Black Actors Network and they got somebody for us.
Going back to your experience guest starring on sitcoms like Family Matters, me and Andrew have related sitcoms to the experience of live theater. And one thing I personally know from being in live theater productions in the past is, like, afterwards, you know, you get to meet the audience, like in the lobby, they say congratulations, hugs, flowers, all that stuff. Did you have any of that sort of energy after you were done with tape night on that Family Matters episode you did?
Yeah, I had my brothers and relatives there, so we all met on the audience along with everybody else. And I think I was saying goodbye to the cast a lot during that time because I'd grown so close with them. And so I was telling Thelma or Darius or Carl or the mother goodbye. I would see them later. In my mind, I was hoping it'd be sooner than later, but I missed the audience being out in the lobby outside of going out there and seeing my brothers. I didn't get a chance to really hang out with the people that were in the audience. But I did run into some people that were in the audience later on. And they said, you know, I was in the audience watching you on Family Matters. But I really didn't get a chance to intermingle with them after the show because I was going after the people on the set or going after my brothers and sisters. But had it not been a live audience, we could not have done what we did because that audience was fantastic. I've been a lot of live audiences, but that's the one that I remember the most because that was my first one. The shock I remember, the thrill I remember, the fear I remember, all of that. Week and a half long, you're rehearsing. Nobody's there except for the producers. The night of the show, the whole audience is there, talking, smacking, laughing, all that stuff. And I'm sure they cut a lot of it out because there was a lot of it.
Yeah. Some parts were fairly muted. Wait, wouldn't you say, Andrew? I mean, the way you're describing it, Jacques, Andrew, I think, you know, watching the final product by comparison, we're wondering, like, wow, we want to be there.
Yeah, it sounds like a different show.
Let's move on to your journey in ministry and community service. How did that come into your life?
Journey in community service happened when I got out of college. I applied at the YMCA back in about 1981, between 81 or 83. And I applied for the Pasadena YMCA. And I got that as a little counselor that many years ago. Then I stayed at the Y for 20 years. I ended up being the executive director of the YMCA. So that was community service. And then I just went on from community service from there. Ministry came because I was in school and I was taking a class where I could help churches with various problems that they were having. And so I was looking for a pastor to ask about children's ministry. That was the issue. And so I went to a bunch of different pastors, but my dad told me to go to New Revelation Church, which is in Pasadena. And there was this pastor that wasn't so high up that he would talk to me. And so we would go meet like once every 2 weeks. And we talk about his ministry and how I can help him. Then all of a sudden one day he said, I had a dream, and he told me about his dream. And he asked me, he said, do you want to join the ministry? And this is all from that school, from Life Pacific University. That was after I left Jackson State. And I said, sure. He said, well, if that's the case, you're going to have to announce that it is that you're doing it. And that was kind of difficult. But then I said, okay. And then it started ever since about 15 years ago. From New Revelation, I was a youth, the children's pastor. I moved over to Friendship Church, where now I'm the young adult pastor at Friendship Church. Still do a lot of theater with the young adults and the kids. I'm doing actually a podcast now, which I want to talk to you about when this is over to ask you about it. But I still do a lot of stuff that's in the entertainment, but I infuse that in what I'm doing with the young adults and the youth.
Wow. That is wonderful. Talk to us about your podcast now. What's your podcast about?
Well, my podcast is called Discovering Truth, and it's dealing with issues that the churches are dealing with a Christian lens on it. As a matter of fact, the first 2 months are, the first month is why young adults are leaving the church in great droves. Whose fault is it? What can we do to bring them back? The second one is, what are the woman's role in ministry? Can she be a pastor? Can she not be a pastor? And we have a lot of pastors that come on our show and they discuss that. And so each month we have a different subject, and we'll bring pastors on or anybody that actually feels they have an idea about the subject, and we'll discuss it on the podcast. This is the first podcast that I know of that's a Zoom podcast, and I was wondering if mine should be like that or should it just be like radio?
It could be anything you want it to be. I mean, and personally, Andrew and I, we do Zoom recordings, and then I edit them afterwards, and then that's kind of the final product that you hear on podcast platforms. If you have radio station equipment and you just want to record off of that and use that to put on podcast platforms, I mean, whatever works. I mean, as long as the people are able to hear it, it really doesn't matter how you do it. So what's the title of the podcast, Jacques? How can people find it?
It's called Discovering Truth, and I believe it will be on Anchor Network on the Anchor podcast channel. I'll know more in a couple of months, but it's called Discovering Truth.
Okay. Yeah, I think.
And we deal with a lot of the issues that the churches are dealing with right now. And the pastors, believe it or not, have completely different ideas about all these issues. And I'm trying not to start an argument, but the very compelling evidence on both sides of all those issues: homosexuality, women in the church, and young adults in the church.
Okay, well, if you're interested in looking more into Jacques' work, there you go, you got that. Now I remember the Family Matters question I wanted to ask you, and I think this is the last one. So did you end up watching the episode that you were in on Family Matters the night it aired?
Yes, I watched that thing as many times as I possibly could, trying to see how I looked, trying to see how the other actors looked. I tried to learn from it. I watched it all the time. Matter of fact, I even counted the times that it appeared in TV Guide, which we don't have now, but we had back then. I cut it out and put it on my wall. But I watched it every time it came out a lot in reruns. It came in its original episode first, then it came out a lot in reruns. And then I just happened to meet the person that put it on the air on the golf course. And I told him, hey, man, put this thing on as much as you can. And each time it came on, I watched it.
I mean, so it sounds like you loved your performance and you got a kick out of it, and you had no problem, you know, telling anybody you could that you were on Family Matters. That's awesome.
Well, close. I hated my performance. I liked the fact that I was on there and I liked the show, but I hated my performance. At that time, I was thinking a lot like the directors and producers were. I thought that I could probably put more energy into my part. And so it's changed now. But back then when I was acting, I did all my shows with more energy. I hated my part, but I liked the show itself.
So when the show first broadcast and as it kept being rerun, like, did anybody recognize you, like, on the street one day? Like, oh, yeah, I saw you.
Oh, man, yeah. Because back then they were doing promos on TV. So they did the promos for Family Matters, and they did a promo with me and Carl on the air. They did that with almost all the shows I've been on. I guess because I was so tall, they did promos with myself and the other actors there. But I had all kind of people calling me, going, we saw you on TV, man. We saw you. And when are you coming on? All that stuff. And that was fantastic, too. These days, television is not as big of a thing as it used to be because there's so many other mediums that you can see people on or get on or produce stuff yourself. Facebook, podcasts, YouTube, all that stuff. So television is not really, it's a big medium, but it's not as big as it was back then. Back then, if you were on television, you did something great.
Yeah. So with less content options back then, I mean, Andrew and I were talking about, like, the fact that I think your episode, when it originally aired, maybe had like 20 something million viewers, and TV shows nowadays are lucky enough to get 4 or 5 million viewers.
Exactly.
Yes. So it was much more of a communal experience. Andrew, before we wrap up with Jacques, any more questions you want to ask?
Yes. First, Jacques, I'm going to listen to your podcast. It speaks to me just hearing you describe it first thing and first most. As somebody who is gay and Black and grew up in the church and left as a youth, I am just infatuated. I have to hear what this is going to be about. And I'm just going to say some shameless plug, if you would like a voice for somebody who is in my demographic, I would join you on that podcast just to talk.
You know what? You got yourself a deal. That would be fantastic. I'm very serious. Very, very, very serious.
Me too. I'm very serious. I want to hear what it's about because, and I bring that up because I listen to interviews that you've done and you do a lot when it comes to youth with helping them with career development, getting a path for life, setting a goal, a destination, and getting there on the journey and how to present yourself. So how did you come across that portion of your, I guess, would say life to be an empowerment force for the youth?
You know, that's a good question. I think my brother and my dad were, my dad has been a teacher, a professor at college. So I'd always go there and watch him teach his kids. And my brother was, he was president of his class. He did a lot with youth there. So I would believe it came from, and my mother did some too. I think it's just natural, man. When I think about it, it came to me naturally through my parents, through my brother, through my siblings. But for me itself, it became natural. I've always liked kids. I've always liked working with kids, and I've done that all my life. And then when it came to being able to look at the kid and see past what everybody sees as a negative and seeing the positive in him and then teaching him to take that positive and create a great future out of it, it's what I do.
That's amazing. It's a force that's needed because today, just by itself, social media is crazy. And it can discourage youth from just going out there and just trying. And yeah. One of the I listened to you, it was with the Newsweek Network, and you were talking about just that effort of going out there and putting forth some effort can change your life. Is that something that you've based your life on, going out there and just at least trying?
You know what, man? That's interesting that you brought that up. That is interesting that you brought that up. When I was younger, that was what I based my life on. I did some things that people would think were just crazy. I was working at a YMCA, but my background was entertainment. I took a YMCA. We built one of the largest studios in California in that YMCA. I also took a bunch of kids from school, and we were all on television with something called a dramedy. We had them act out their family lives, their school lives, their community lives. They did it on a live stage show. Then all of a sudden, CBS came out of nowhere and said they wanted to show it. That was back then. Somewhere, that got lost. And I'm getting on myself now because I'm not like that now. I'm thinking to myself now, I did all that stuff back then, radio shows with you, television shows with you, films with you. What am I doing right now? Am I scared to do it because of failure? There's a lot of stuff that I want to do. But I'm not doing, and I'm trying to remember, I'm trying to think what made me do it back then that I'm not doing it right now. This podcast is one of them. I did buy a lot of equipment. We're doing this podcast. I'll probably write you online to ask you various questions about it, but I'm doing this podcast that will start next month, and I got a lot of subjects, but I got to make sure that I follow through with it and do it, because on each issue, I've got some pros and I got some cons coming from some big people.
Right.
But I just got to continue to do those things that come to my mind to try to do, whether I know how to do them or not.
I got you. I'm putting it out in the universe. I'm encouraging it. I'm serious. Any way I can help or contribute, please let me know, because this
is already you're already labeled as a guest. So I'm going to get you on.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now, one final question I have to ask you when it comes to your acting career, because you hinted at earlier, you know, the washboard abs, the things like that start to come into play as you were beginning to develop your career as a Black actor in Hollywood. How was that experience when it comes to that look or that typecasting that you may have experienced? Have you experienced any of that? And what did you do to overcome it?
It was devastating because all of a sudden you were in when I was younger. Then all of a sudden you were out. You were noticing what was in the younger people, the washboard abs, just the younger people in general. And then being Black, there's not a lot of roles out there for us. So you have a small amount of roles, and those roles are cut because of being young. There wasn't very many roles at all. So I found myself who was working. I was working all the time. I mean, all the time. Then all of a sudden it began to cut back a little bit. That's before I got in the radio. It began to cut back, and I'm thinking, what in the world is going on? All of a sudden I'm going to auditions and no luck, period. I wasn't even auditioning at first. They were calling me. Then I was going to auditions and I couldn't get on. So I kind of dropped out of acting. And it was during that and during while I was working at the YMCA that I got into ministry. And that is, for me, just fulfilling as acting was. I would still act if I had the opportunity, but I'm not feeling like I'm missing something now because I am doing ministry, which is helping people also. I believe that acting helped people because whatever role we were trying to portray, I did my best to portray it so people could see the pros and cons of the situation. And I make it as true as possible. And in each one of the roles that I did, especially on Family Matters, when he wanted to make his own choice and the father trying to pressure him, and even the pro basketball player telling him to do what he wants to do, it made other young people learn, yes, I may be tall, I might be a great athlete, but I really don't like basketball. I don't like sports. I like English or math. I'm now able to choose English or math instead of what it is that I'm being pushed into. So that helped me out also. But in both cases, with the ministry and with acting, I'm still being fulfilled. Still in ministry, though. I'm still in the entertainment industry a little bit by doing this podcast.
I love that. Wow. Well, Jacques, for people who want to keep in touch with all you're doing, who you are, can you tell them exactly where to go? Like the website, the social media, like how can we find you?
Well, I don't have a lot of social media, but you can find me on Facebook under Jacques Bolton. Soon you'll be able to find me on Instagram under the same thing, Jacques Bolton or Christian Men and Women in Action.
And Jacques, Jacques Bolton, Bolton. Just in case there may be many other Jacques Boltons, can you tell people which picture to look out for in the Facebook?
It's the picture with me and my wife and a couple of the kids there.
And so I think the Facebook that I've been interacting with you, like the profile picture I see is like, it seems like a kid that's dressed up.
I'm sorry. I forgot I changed that. That's my son. I got my son in one little caption of it and the son and his mother in the other caption. Yeah, You're right. I forgot about that. But I'm under construction with another site right now to include the Discovering Truth site.
All right. Gotcha. Well, man, you've been more than generous with the time that you gave us. We really, really appreciate you speaking with us about your Family Matters experience and just, you know, your overall experience, you know, with life, your career. Are you still doing some radio nowadays or have you given that up?
I'm doing voiceovers, but no radio. Radio isn't as big as it used to be either, but I am doing voiceovers.
What kind of voiceovers are you doing?
I do some for commercials. I'm getting ready to start again and do some for television commercials, for television spots. Any kind I can get into, I'm doing. That's why when you said my radio voice, I was like, I wish the money had said that also. But I'm trying to do any that I can. Any that I can, I'm taking.
Can you give us a sample or an example of a voiceover that you did either recently or in the past?
Yeah, I did a cash call for a long time. I did Bed Bath & Beyond for a while. I did some campaigns against campaigns against drinking for a while. Oh, I am the voice of Louisiana Hot Sauce. Just various ones like that.
Nice. Do you remember like a memorable fun tagline from any of those voiceover experiences? Maybe one you could recite?
I would say my biggest one to recite is yes.
just saying the word yes.
yes, with the rolling R. Yes. I was amazed how much they pay you for that.
Wait, what voiceover was that for? Who was the client?
I think that was Louisiana. No. It was when they did the Green Lantern video game. I was playing the Igloo on the Green Lantern video game, and that was my line, or one of my lines.
Andrew, you're freaking out right now. Tell them why.
I am, because I have played the Green Lantern video game at least 7 times through.
Are you serious?
I am 100% serious.
Now, it's not the full video game. It was the one that was on while they were doing the movie.
Yes, it was the one that was with the theatrical release of the movie, and it came out.
That's it. I'm just trying to find it. That's it.
Wow. If I find a copy of this game, I'm going to have to post about it. I haven't played it in over 10 years at this point.
That's what I like about voiceover. You can always go back and get them, because I went back and got this voiceover that I did with this dog during Christmas time. It was with the same theater that did Sharknado. They did a Christmas movie with animals, and I played a German Shepherd, and they were able to find that after 5 years.
Well, Jacques Bolton, thank you so much, man. We'll definitely stay in touch, and we can't wait to post this conversation. This was great.
Appreciate you guys.
Have a great warm California night.
Thanks.
All right, take care, Jacques.
All right, thanks guys.
Well, how about that?
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. God, I mean, you know, the guy is, once again, I mean, he has the kind of voice where sometimes you may not even pay attention to what he says. You're just so mesmerized by the sexy baritone. But even with the sexy baritone, what a great story he has.
Oh, yeah. Enthralled from the moment he started talking. But now this just validates even more these theories with Shadow Judy and Pushy Carl.
Yes. And I was really, really taken aback by the studio audience reactions that we don't hear in the final product. Because I know Rich Corell indicated to that in his interview. And then I think when Jock made that further, it was just like, man, like you really have to be there to get that pure, raw, live theater-like experience. Because, yeah, in post-production, they could just splice out audience reactions. If a laugh is too long, if a pause is too long. And, you know, of course, the people at home, you know, they don't know what's going on because that's the only thing that they see. But when you hear the behind the scenes stories, you wonder like, wow, God, if only I was there in 1989 to see the real thing.
Right. I'm like thinking like, what else did we miss? That one moment alone, the audience cheering for Eddie standing up for his decision would have changed the entire dynamic of that episode for me.
Yeah, like Jacques told me about that, and it instantly reminded me of like when the audience was applauding Theo Huxtable in the first episode of The Cosby Show when he was telling his dad, like, yo, dad, I'm dumb, and you gotta accept me that way. I'm not gonna have good grades, and you just got to accept me for who I am. And then, of course, know that, you know, Cliff Huxtable just shoots him down with lines that actually gets an even bigger audience response. So yeah, if they had that kind of vibe, you know, with Eddie's moment in Family Matters, I think that would have heightened the episode more.
It really would have. I feel like we got cheated.
And props to Jacques, because I think he might have been our only guest star actor who actually had the guts to come to the writers and say, hey, I got a suggestion for you guys to make this episode better. Because if you remember, I think through talking with Susan Merson and Peter Fitzsimmons, they were just like, oh, we're just grateful to, you know, get some money and we'll come in, do whatever you guys want us to do, and then we'll leave. And there's nothing wrong with that. I get that. You know, you just want to be a support system. But it's a whole nother thing if you're a guest star coming in and you're like, oh, actually, writers, I got an idea for you. This would be great. The writers allegedly shooting him down and saying, oh, what does this athlete know about acting and writing? I mean, not so nice, but, you know, good on Jacques' part for actually standing up for himself and his creative ideas.
Yes, I applaud him 100% because he really is the first person we've met who's done that. And like you said, it's nothing against anybody who did it. It's just amazing to know that he went in there and was like, hey, I could be this reoccurring character and I could pitch you some good ideas. And I would have loved him and Rachel together. I would have loved it.
Like, how awesome is it that he was in sync with us? Because just as we were thinking, like, oh, my God, this would have been a great recurring character, he was thinking the same thing, too, like, during that week when he was, you know, rehearsing for the show. So, anyway, Jacques Bolton, look him up. Keep in touch with him. He's doing great things. And for you listening, of course, as always, subscribe, rate, review the Delicious Recap Family Matters wherever you get podcasts. More guests to come. And I think we're airing Jacques before Susan. So we might have already spoiled a bit of Susan's interview, but Susan Merson, our episode 8 guest star, will be our next guest. So there you go. That'll be another great conversation about her experience on Family Matters, as well as other TV shows and movies and such. Follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, YouTube, at Family Matters Rewatch Pod. And I think that's about it. Andrew, we are about to wrap up this recording after 10:30 at night, East Coast time, where it is single digits, both here in Vermont and where you are in upstate New York. So please wrap us up with a slogan that ironically doesn't really describe how we're feeling right now.
It doesn't, and I'm kicking myself, John, because I should have had him say it. That voice would have been perfect to repeat, "Let deliciousness ring."